Welcome to Dakota Midday. Rapid City voters will decide who should lead the city on June 2nd. And tomorrow on Dakota Midday, we're going to talk with Rapid City Mayor Sam Quaker and former Rapid City Chief of Police Steve Allender. Allender is challenging Quaker in that race, and we will have that conversation tomorrow at noon central here on Dakota Midday. Joining me now is Rob Gein. He's the Director of Policy Reform and Advocacy for the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And a new Kids Count policy report highlights the need to ensure that kids, particularly those in the child welfare system, have a loving, nurturing, and supported family to help them navigate through life. And Rob is here to talk about that report right now. Thanks for joining us today on Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Kara.
So let's begin, and we'll have you kind of summarize this Kids Count report.
Sure. So we're hoping that this report is a wake-up call for those who care most about our vulnerable youth. As you noted, we know that children do best in families. That seems like common sense. It's what your listeners want for their children. It's certainly what I want for mine. But we also now know from rigorous research that when children are placed in foster care, they do best in families. They have better educational outcomes, they're more likely to be employed, and they're more likely to succeed in families later on during their lives. Yet 1 in 7 children nationally, and I'll note 1 in 5 in South Dakota, when they're removed from their homes are placed in institutions. And these institutions are not good for them, and the children are being placed there largely unnecessarily.
Define institution.
So when I refer to institutions, I'm referring to settings that are not family-based. So the first priority that you would want if your child had to be removed from your care would be a relative, a family member who could step in and take care. Your second choice would be another family setting, a foster family who's volunteered to care for them. You wouldn't want them in a business-like, large group setting where lots of teenagers are living together, unless that was absolutely necessary for their therapeutic needs.
Okay. And you gathered this data how, and over how long of a period of time?
Sure. We've been collecting this data for quite some time. We're looking at the data that the states report to the federal government. And what's interesting is that we see enormous variation across the states. So in some states, only 4% of children are in group or institutional settings. And in some states, it's over 35%. There has been a decline, thankfully. We're seeing movement in the right direction, but that success is not consistent, and we need to, you know, put more emphasis on it.
And your numbers, pretty much 2013 numbers we're looking at?
2013 is the most recent data available from all states, that's the numbers that we're putting out.
And this is the first year you've seen an increase in the number of kids put in foster care, too? Is that right?
That is true. For a long period of time, about the last 10 years, we were seeing a decline in the number of kids in foster care generally. In the last year, we saw a tick up, a small one, but an important milestone that we may have hit the bottom of what we're capable of.
What role does poverty play in your numbers?
So I think it's important to recognize when people hear of abuse and neglect, 75% of kids nationally and 90% of the kids in South Dakota are coming into the system because of neglect. Now, there is a difference between neglect and poverty, but certainly poverty puts stresses on families that makes it difficult for parents to care for their kids. So it's a contributing factor.
And daycare opportunities also included in this that, I mean, if they can't afford daycare or if there isn't a daycare open in the area during a late night shift, then kids are left home alone. Is that all play into this as well?
It certainly does. Mm-hmm. So children of a young age left unattended could be reported for neglect. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the child would be removed. child serving agencies would work with the birth parents to figure out what's a better way to care for this child. Is there a relative? Is there someone who could care for this child while you're at work? But persistent incidences of a child being left alone, unsupervised, if it's unsafe, then that child might have to be removed.
And South Dakota has a very high rate of single mothers, single working mothers as well.
Yes, and that certainly contributes to the challenges that you're raising.
Okay. And so define then, I mean, so how then do you guarantee finding these family-based care?
So again, we should apply the My Child test. What would I do if, God forbid, my wife and I were unable to care for my kids? We would certainly look for relatives and people related to us to care for the children, because they will have already been traumatized by having to be removed from my home. They would want to someone who knew them and could care for them. And every child coming into the system has family members. In the majority of cases, we can find at least one, if not multiple, family members who are willing to step up and care for a child. But if that's not possible, many states have invested in the recruitment and support of family foster parents, volunteers who have an extra room, who want to give back to their community and take a child who's been abused and neglected. The group or institutional setting should be used as a last resort, sort of like an emergency room, to stabilize the child and get them back to where they do best, which is families.
Now, your job is designing and implementing an advocacy strategy. So I'm wondering what your strategy is for this.
So we are fortunate that there is enormous momentum on this issue. I feel like we've hit a tipping point. Just this morning, the United States Senate held a hearing entitled No Place to Grow Up, How to Safely Reduce Reliance on Foster Care Group Homes. So there is bipartisan support in Congress. The president's budget proposal included similar language on investing in foster families rather than in institutions. So things like this report, constantly trying to get the drumbeat moving forward, we're hoping that we're going to have some success soon.
So is it going to take federal laws or state laws or both?
So it's a combination of both. Certainly the federal policy framework is solid. It talks about making sure that children are in families, but the resources might not necessarily be there. And so some states are investing their own resources. Some states are using federal resources more effectively. So it's a combination of federal policies that incentivize and provide the resources to states, and then states taking advantage of those opportunities and putting forth a good structure.
And you're talking financial incentives?
It could be financial incentives. It could be reporting. So, for example, one of the suggestions we've put forward, which has been identified by others as well, is that if a child welfare agency is going to go as far as not giving a child the chance of a family, they should have justification for doing so. It should be a last resort. So it's a large step. Make sure that they've tried everything else and that the residential setting that we're going to place a child in is absolutely necessary. And then once we've done that, don't just leave them there. Let's check in and make sure that the child's needs are getting met and return that child to a family as soon as possible.
And do you have the statistics to show that kids are being left?
Absolutely. So the average length that a child is in a group setting is between 8 and 9 months. That may not sound like a long time, but in the life of a child, it's a very long time. And more importantly, the research shows that the kids who do better in residential settings, that are getting their needs met, have their needs met in 3 to 6 months at most. And after that, they start to either level off or actually decline. They're harmed by the longer stays in an institutional setting.
Now, South Dakota has a very large Native American population. So talk a little bit about those challenges with this.
Yes, and there are a number of challenges in the Indian community. Some of them mirror the challenges faced in the rest of the state. Certainly, finding and being able to recruit and license foster parents in the Indian community is a challenge. And a number of tribes have noted they need more flexibility because their view of family is even broader than what we normally think of. And the idea of taking a child out of a family is abhorrent to them.
And so that's going to take more state effort than federal effort?
It's a combination of both. The federal government giving more flexibility to tribes to do what they know is in the best interest of their own children, and then states working with the tribes. Some tribes manage their own child welfare programs. Others have partnerships with the state. And, of course, some of the Indian children are living on reservations and some of them are not. So both the state and the tribes need to take action.
And how can you measure the success in Indian country? Is it just about the numbers?
So I think it is the same regardless of where the child is. And again, it's the way I would measure success for my own children. How are they doing? We want children to go to school. We want them to be employed. We want them to be safe. The measures of those all look better when they're in family care. So the measures should be the same in states and in tribes. Are these children being connected to family? Do they feel loved? Are they in an environment that is conducive to them doing well later on in life?
But what if that is in a non-Native American home?
We should try everything we can to make sure that children are in a Native home. Mm-hmm. A part of a child's well-being, part of their identity, is the culture in which they're in. And tribal children are from that culture, and losing that cultural identity is not something which is in their well-being.
Is this a shift in the pendulum, so to speak, that, I mean, at one point group homes were the norm?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have to understand we've evolved in our understanding of what's best for kids. 100 years ago, we had orphanages, and mm-hmm. we placed children there, and we thought we were doing best by them. And maybe back then that was the only option, and that was what was good for them. 30 years ago, when we had foster parents, we said, you know, don't hug or show any affection to your children because we don't want them to be attached to you because this is temporary and they're going to have to be returned home. And so they lived in sterile, loveless environments. We even moved them from foster home to avoid them becoming attached. And until recently, we thought maybe institutions aren't that bad. You know, they've got nice clean walls and rolling hills, and there are a variety of services available. But what we failed to recognize was the importance of family in a child's resilience, and that family is the best medicine to help children heal from trauma.
And now showing love and compassion is a good thing.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're encouraging.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. if not within their own family, then another family who can show them that they belong and can encourage them to succeed.
And so how do you reach out then to individual states with suggestions and advocating for children?
So we now have examples of exceptional leadership and innovation in both the public and private sectors. And what we're hoping is that some of the states and private providers who are looking to make a change can look to some of the leaders and follow the model that they have and invest in families, invest in family foster homes, and they will naturally see a decline in the numbers of kids that they're putting in group settings.
Is it going to take a public outcry as well to help?
It certainly can't hurt. You know, if it was my child, I'd be crying out loud as loud as anyone. Certainly the public should recognize that we are harming our most vulnerable children. And by the way, we're misusing taxpayer dollars because an institution is 7 to 10 times more expensive than supporting a family to take care of that child. And so every dollar that we're losing there is a dollar we could be spending on supporting more kids. So it's not good for the kids and it's not good for our state budgets.
All right. Well, Rob, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on Dakota Midday today.
My pleasure.
All right. Rob Gein is the Director of Policy Reform and Advocacy for the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and a new Kids Count policy report just came out this week. When we come back, we're going to talk with a producer from Frontline about a new Frontline that airs tonight on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and it is called, I got to find my thing, Secrets, Politics, and Torture. You're listening to Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.